This is Youth Baseball Talk with your host, Jim Cromer. Only on the Ignotainment Media Network. Put me in cold. I'm ready to play.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's edition of Youth Baseball Talk here on the Ignotainment Media Network. Very excited about our show this week. We did the. We were very fortunate to have Steve Springer and his great story last week. It was a great inspirational story for all our young players out there. Anybody that's ever been told you're too small or you're just not good enough when you're younger, what a great message. And I'm loving the ability to talk to some ex-players and the experiences and the things they've gone through, and having the opportunity to talk to some people. And this week, I think you're going to love our guests. They're entrenched in the baseball community and helping all of our young players be the best players they can be. Youth Baseball Talk, of course, is brought to you every week courtesy of our friends at Weber Chevrolet down in Granite City, my good friend Jeff Kohler. They've been in business over 100 years. They offer no-hassle deals. Our good friend Bart Ostroskis obviously still maintains that anybody that comes in buys a car from him, mentions Youth Baseball Talk, he will personally write a check for $200 into your favorite youth team's account. And with all the fundraising going on these days, that's a pretty good deal. Check them out at WeberGraniteCityChevy.com. Phone number 877-208-4541. Ask for our good friend Bart Ostroskis. Obviously, for those of you that are listening to the show, you know you can find us on iTunes. Download Youth Baseball Talk on iTunes. Please subscribe. For our Droid users, you can find us on the Stitcher app. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/youthbaseballtalk. We are on Twitter. We are at Podcast Baseball. And, of course, we have our fully functional website, youthbaseballtalk.com. You can check out our Coach's Corner and all of our great sponsors on there as well. This week on our show, welcoming to the Upright Construction Studio Lines, I'd love to welcome Matt Whiteside and Mark Gallion with the local St. Louis Gamers Baseball Club. How you guys doing?
Good, thanks. Thanks for having us.
Doing great, yep, thanks.
Yeah, I'm obviously familiar with your guys' program. I talk a little bit on the show that I know there's many wonderful, I don't know if you call them programs, clubs, teams in the area. I know, like, everybody thinks like our stuff over here is a program. It's actually not. It's all pretty independent. But you guys, the reason I'm interested in talking to guys like yourselves is I think you guys run a good program where you guys try to send a consistent message, and I think you guys are doing a great job of that. But at the same time, I think the consistency of what you're trying to do and your transparency with parents and things like that when they come in is something that's needed. So, obviously both you guys are more than qualified, but Mark, why don't we start with you? Why don't you kind of tell us a little bit of your background and how you got involved in the game of baseball?
Sure. Well, thanks again for having us. The Gamers program started up in 2007, but prior to that, I kind of did the corporate executive route, worked in, MBA, management consulting, Fortune 500 companies. And when my kids got to be 12 or 13 years old, it was so difficult to get on the plane and fly to somewhere, fly to Europe, fly to Asia, and miss all their baseball games.
Yeah.
Baseball was always my favorite sport. I got more and more interested in coaching it. And, typically when I do things, I do it kind of, pretty intently.
Yeah, okay. That's a good quality.
So I kind of dove in head first, probably around 1999 or so, started, actively coaching. Was fortunate enough to coach with some really good people. Got involved back in the early days of a baseball organization that's still around called Balls and Strikes over in, on the St. Louis side. The actually founder of Balls and Strikes, Josh Levy, and I started it's probably the first club baseball team in the youth area, 2001, 2002 kind of time frame. And so we kind of formed that. And it kind of floundered a little bit, but I kind of kept it going with one or two teams over that period of time, and always had a vision of kind of doing things the right way from a baseball standpoint, but also just the right way in terms of using baseball to teach kids kind of how to be successful in life, which is it's a great sport for that.
Yeah, I pay attention to a lot of the stuff that you send out. I've retweeted out or reposted out on Facebook some of the stuff. I think your stuff's fantastic. But, you know, I think that's a big part of this because the show is more about, you know, I've said it all along, this show is more about trying to get information to people so that they can make their own decisions, but at the same time trying to put them in contact with people that are much smarter than I or they are or anybody admittedly would be. And, you know, if you follow you guys at all, and I think there's a couple great programs in St. Louis. I think you guys all, even though you guys probably all do things a little bit differently, I think you all have your obvious things that you do well. So just through following you guys, I mean, I'm impressed with the way you guys run your youth programs all the way up through the top. The consistency, I think, is fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, the reality is that although everyone's got dreams, right, the number of kids that come out of select baseball and ever earn a paycheck in baseball is so minute, it's irrelevant.
Right, yeah.
What matters is are the kids that kind of go on into other parts of life and are successful and what lessons they learn from baseball to take to those that part of their life. And, you know, that's been a foundation of why I coached from the very beginning. And then around 2006, I think, I got to know Matt Whiteside through a group called Head First Baseball in Washington, D.C., who has been a leader kind of across the country in promoting kind of the right approach to select level baseball and using baseball as an avenue to get kids into real academic institutions. And Brendan Sullivan there at Head First connected Matt and I together. Matt was right on the verge of retiring after 17 years of professional baseball.
17, wow.
And had been involved with the Head First program, was looking to coming back to St. Louis. And at that point in time, I was involved with two teams. And I'd gotten to know Matt and then Scott Cooper. I was working with him very closely with the teams that I was currently coaching. He was kind of the baseball guy.
Right.
And so I did kind of, we took the opportunity to get together and kind of lay out if we were to do something from scratch the right way, what would it look like? And, you know, that was the foundation of the Gamers program.
Now you mentioned Scott Cooper. I think some of our listeners may be familiar. I believe he was from the St. Louis area. And correct me if I'm wrong, was it Pattonville?
Yeah, Scott was a Pattonville high school grad, a third round draft pick. So he went from
Boston to the Cardinals, correct?
Yeah, he drafted by Boston. You know, he's kind of like the perfect time to come up with Boston.
Yeah.
Ted Williams was his minor league hitting coach.
Oh, boy.
Carl Yastrzemski was around all the time, and when he got called up, Wade Boggs was there.
So this guy knows a little bit about hitting, probably would be a good guess.
Three Hall of Fame kind of world-class hitters.
Now, you mentioned this gentleman sitting to my left and your right is obviously an associate of yours with the Gamers and obviously has had a great career in his own right, Matt Whiteside. Matt, why don't you tell us a little bit about your baseball career and kind of what led you into this.
Sure. Well, I wouldn't say great career, a long career.
You had a career, which I think most people would give their right arm for. Wouldn't we all agree?
I was fortunate to stay healthy. So I grew up in a small town in southeast Missouri, and I think my foundation was built on one, the way I was raised at home, which was very strict, and two, by the coaching that I had through my younger years. And I've talked before about the number of coaches that I've had since then, and while they were good and they definitely helped with mechanics or helped with certain things, the foundation of hard work and discipline and struggle and failure and get back up were through my high school baseball and basketball coach, as well as my dad. So I left Charleston, Missouri, went to Arkansas State for 4 years. I got drafted as a senior 25th round pick from Texas with Texas. And usually when you're a 25th round pick as a senior, you're just kind of a fill-in guy so that the top 10 round guys have somebody to play with on the field. you get $1,000 assigned before taxes, and then you get sent off to fill in the gaps and pitch out of the bullpen. And I had a series of fortunate for me, unfortunate for the guys that happened. I was in low A ball. Two guys that were supposed to close had serious injuries. I got thrust into that position, had 29 consecutive saves in 91. They took me up to double A in 92, had 21 saves there. And then that year I got called up to Texas. So it was a series of unfortunate incidents for somebody else that I took advantage of, and I had a coach there that really took unbelievable amount of time with me named Jackson Todd to work on mechanics and help me correct a lot of the flaws that I had. So his, you know, his patience really helped push me along and get me up to the big leagues. And then from there, I was with Texas from 92 to 98. Got released in spring training. Actually, coincidentally, Scott Cooper and I got released from the same spring training with Texas and barely even remembered each other.
Oh, you're kidding.
In the same clubhouse for about 6 weeks and both got released. So anyway, then I bounced around with a few other teams from 98 through 2006 and ended up deciding to hang him up then as a 39-year-old with a stress fracture in my right forearm. And the only injury I ever had, but that's kind of what the ultimate decision came to. And like Mark had said, he and I had gotten to know each other through my friend Brendan Sullivan with Head First, and we sat down and talked about how we do an indoor place, how we do a team program, and things have just have grown from there. And it's been fun. It's been a great learning experience, and hopefully we've done a few things along the way to influence kids in a positive way.
Well, it's funny. Both you guys have touched on one of the big things on the show, and that is coaching. And, I've said it before, whether people want to admit it or not, coaches play a huge role in kids' lives. And coaches can say, well, I'm not their parent or whatever, but the reality of it is you play a huge role. And I've maintained on here that coaches need to be coached. And it's amazing, just the other day, a coworker had asked me about her coach. And I told her, I said, it's kind of hard to get upset with a guy that's volunteering his time, even though you feel like he might not be doing the greatest job. But it kind of goes back to, if anybody's serious about this, they need to be coached. And you alluded to it, Matt, about you had various coaches along the way. And the message is probably always a little bit different from all of them. And sometimes you get that from kids too, like, well, you tell me to do this, and they tell me to do that. And it's like I tell my own kids, you're going to have a lot of coaches in your life. You better take a little bit from all of them. That's what I think. But I think, and that was why I was eager to talk to you guys and why I like to talk to some of the other programs and things like that, because I think the consistency of the message that you guys are all trying to send is what I think is the most important thing. Would you not agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, from our program perspective, we teach the same thing from our 10U team up through our 18U team, whether it's our pitching mechanics, our hitting mechanics, the fielding, cutoffs and relays. Everything we teach is the same. And we know that our 10-year-olds aren't going to execute it as well as our 18-year-olds, but we teach them those things, and as they come through the program, those things become habits, and now they're reacting to plays as opposed to acting in a situation on the field, for example. We coach our coaches up to use the same terminology and try to provide a consistent message throughout so that there is a little of the less confusion that you're mm-hmm. referring to. I think that it helps build a good foundation in the baseball side, and then we continue to preach the same messages that Mark was talking about earlier that the game of baseball can help you with. And, we try to just provide a great foundation for the kids that come through the program.
Yeah, Mark, I don't know if eloquently is the word, mm-hmm. but did bring up something, too, that we also discuss on here, and that is, academics mm-hmm. and the avenue, obviously, that they lead to open up. And it sounds like, and I think what's important, too, is that message is with you guys. And is 10 years old the youngest you guys start them at, or is it just a matter of depending on interest?
Yeah, 10 is the youngest. Originally my plan was 13, or our plan was 13, and over time it's gotten younger and younger.
Yeah.
But, it's pretty high-level baseball, and,
sure.
our philosophy is not, like, talent-wise, but in terms of how we teach things.
Right.
And, a lot of young kids just aren't ready to have that kind of, like, intense instruction.
Right.
And so it's got to be kind of a good fit for the kid.
Right.
And it's harder to find those kids at younger ages.
And I've noticed just through some of your stuff that I've seen that it looks like you guys are doing some stuff where you introduce kids to the game with some different things you do with some camps and things, but 10 years old sounds like a great thing. So that's great stuff. I mean, we learned a little bit about both you guys and how it all kind of got started. And once again, we're here on the Upright Construction Studio lines with Mark Gallion and Matt Whiteside from the St. Louis Gamers. Guys, we learned a little bit the last go-around there about you guys and kind of how you got started. Let's talk a little bit now about where you're going and kind of what you've built. I hear a lot of good things. I know multiple people that are in your organizations, and they speak real highly. Obviously, I'm a social media guy now, and I pay attention to things, and I know you guys are doing great things. We touched a little bit on some of the philosophy stuff. Why don't you give our listeners maybe, and this is what I envision out there. There's a lot of people out there and that are listening to this wondering, you know, what do I do? And that's really the whole thing, the whole reason for the show is there's a lot of people that are like doing things and then they're asking all these questions. So, you know, if somebody was to contact you guys, kind of walk them through the process of kind of how it works and what they should be looking for. Mark, why don't you start?
Yeah, you know, it's in particular at younger ages, we kind of think about our program two ways. There's the middle school, elementary school program, then there's the high school program. And, the number one issue that in particular parents have is they've got a really short-term perspective on things. They're more focused on, okay, this season. We fundamentally have a different perspective, and right. That is that, you know, baseball is a process, and you know, the process is you come in at a certain age, you get developed into a baseball player, and part of that is being physical. Part of it is actual skills of how to field, how to throw, how to hit, and a big part of it's mental, how to compete, you know, during a game. But for a kid, 12, 13, 14-year-old kid, to develop along those lines, it takes time. And so, the biggest thing I think parents need to be aware of is this is a long-term process. It's not something that's going to just be, this season.
Yeah.
And, that's a big mindset that we've struggled to get through. And it's really, for our program, it's kind of our basis. It's more developmental. Our ideal situation is, a kid comes in at 12 and he stays in our program to 18. A lot of times that doesn't happen. But that's kind of what we're going for. And, that mindset is just a little bit out of step with the way parents think about baseball.
Right. I say sometimes, and, people look at me like I'm crazy, but I do say sometimes that I think practicing and training, especially starting in January, and then, the real, when you get outside, that's for the coaches and that's for the players' development. Games are about 75% for the parents, sometimes because they're looking for that, hey, what's he doing? How good is he? How good is he now versus when he was? And it's like we try to preach a little bit of the you use the word process. Yep. Matt, why don't you touch a little bit about on that process and what you would ideally, and I think Mark, mentions 12 years, I think 10 years old, that process of what people should realistically be looking for, from that age of 10 on up.
Yeah, Mark said that parents think about it on a, in a year. Some of them want to have it happen in a week, and you're trying to, you're trying to coax their egos a little bit on why isn't Johnny playing third or short and hitting in the three hole. From 10 years old up, and even younger nowadays, there has to be a process, like Mark used, to develop their arm strength or their foot speed or their hands or their mechanics for throwing a pitch or just their overall baseball IQ, so that as they transition into the middle school and then from middle school into the high school years, that they're able to get out on the field and compete against the best players and the best programs and have success. But if you do that too late, right, then you're behind the eight ball of kids that are they're practicing year round in southern states, and that's kind of some of the stuff that we ran up against earlier in our program was we're going down and competing against those type of teams and players that are physical and they play year round, so they have 10,000 more reps it was black and white the first couple of years of going down and doing that. So I think if they can kind of step back and trust the people that they're with and see the success that we've had with the number of kids going out from our high school age programs off to college baseball, regardless of the level, that if they'll trust the process and the people that they're involved with and just see that as long as their son is getting incrementally better month to month, year to year and throughout, then at the end of the day, from a baseball side, they're going to be a skilled athlete. They're going to have learned how to work hard. They're going to have learned how to deal with failure. They're going to have probably had some success on the field. And they're going to be confident that, they can play at the next level if they allow that process to happen.
It's funny that you bring that up about, the warm weather states. Darren Hendrickson, I know you guys are familiar with Darren. He's a good friend of not only the show, he's a good friend of mine. you know, we talk about all the time what a tough job he has. You know, he's Division One school with a, now he's built up a pretty quality program right here in our backyard. And, you know, number one, I mean, obviously they're a quality school, so he's dealing with a little bit different academic enrollment than most. But then to fight that, you know, then he's got to try to find somewhere to train, which I know you guys have been involved with him a little bit. So, you know, he's got to go down there and compete against schools, especially at the beginning of the year when he goes south, that have been outside all year. So, you know, it's something that, you know, we talk about it being a Midwest issue, but, you know, you might as well get used to it, because there's, you know, who knows when it's going to stop for you. So, but you guys have done some renovations over at All-Star, and it's gotten bigger. You know, you guys, how long ago did you, Mark, when did you do that renovation?
Matt, when we started the Gamers program, we were in a 20,000 square foot facility, maybe less than that.
Probably 15.
15,000, low ceilings, and we just jam-packed it and did everything we could in there. And then about 4 years ago, Matt and Dave Pregon, who's another director of the Gamers, but is a co-owner with Matt of All-Star Performance, built a really state-of-the-art facility.
Right.
And then they had the opportunity to expand it last year. And it is like the, you know, if we had sat down, you know, back in 2007 and drawn out what would be the perfect facility for a Midwestern, you know, select baseball program,
yeah,
indoor facility, we probably would have come up with something that looks a lot like we have now.
Yeah.
So it's got a big indoor infield, you know, full indoor infield, you know, lots and lots of cages, lots of bullpens, a lot of workout areas.
Right.
So, you know, it's really it's become kind of a nice basis for us to kind of work from this concept of process and development. And so when our kids are in there, they get so many reps. And, you know, in my mind, those reps are all about catching up to those kids in Memphis.
Right, yeah.
Much less the kids in Florida.
Sure.
We just need to catch up to the kids in Memphis, because their baseball season is a month longer than ours.
Sure.
And so, you know, it's all about catching up with reps.
Now, you guys, obviously, with the Gamers program, you know, for our listeners, you know, it, obviously people that are obviously interested, in whether it be with you or whoever, but, you know, it's a process just like any other. You know, kids, they find you guys and they come try out, and you guys, you know, take their skill level into account, amongst other things, and decide where they fit. Now, I know, you know, different sports and things like that will have 100 kids come show up. Now, you guys, will you guys make a lot of teams, or do you try to keep it, you know, to kids that are ready to start and that you feel like they can go? Or do you guys just say, hey, you know, we've got this many kids that want to play? I mean, is that realistic? That may not be realistic. You probably get so many kids that come. Is that true?
So we try to have two teams per age group from 10 through 17, and then we have one 18-year-old team. This year we have three 13s because we have one 11 and one 12. But we don't want to, you know, Mark and I know the name of every player in our program when we know whose parent each, whose son is each parent's, you know. And,
wow.
And that, to us, that keeps it on a personal level. I mean, we have, you know, 400 or 500 kids come to three or four different tryouts a year, and we probably keep 20% of them. We could easily fill, you know, a CYC level or a rec level team, put our name on it, collect their fees, and not know anything about them, and really not care about their development, because you can only cut the pie in so many pieces.
Sure.
So we try to keep it at a manageable number of teams where we can have a personal relationship with them, where we can have some interaction with them. You know, at practice, we practice with each age group twice a week throughout the winter for 12 weeks. We practice with them at least once a week from April through July. So there's a lot of time spent with myself, Coach Guy, and our other directors of the program and coaches, where we get to know the kids on and off the field. And so I think you lose sight of that if you just take on everybody that wants to put on a Gamers jersey.
Right. Now, you guys are obviously feel like you're very hands-on with all age groups, not just one group. So, I mean, I think that's great. Now there's obviously numerous programs, and I don't say numerous programs, there's numerous teams, but there's a few programs here in town. There's obviously some national programs, and a big part of, again, I reiterate, you know, to all my listeners, you know, you pay attention to who you're playing for, because, you know, your coach better be the kind of guy that realizes that he needs to always be improving. I mean, I think that's the biggest complaint that I get from parents, is that, you know, their coach and I hate to use this term, but is a know-it-all and doesn't need any more, you know, knows everything, doesn't need any advice, doesn't need to go seek any. But now, do you guys do a lot of, are you guys, I mean, do you feel like you're continually evolving and learning and as things change? I mean, is that a big thing with you guys?
It's a big thing. I mean, largely because, you know, we have the benefit of going down and competing in Florida and you know, and whenever you go down there, you see things that people are doing differently, and you get good ideas. And then furthermore, we've been involved with USA Baseball for a number of years now, and that gets us more engaged at a pretty deep level with kind of the best players from Oklahoma, Arkansas, Nebraska, and Kansas, as well as Missouri. And so, you know, if you keep your eyes open, you learn so much about, gosh, this kid does this a certain way. Why is he doing that? And you find out why he's doing that. And I mean, over the years, I mean, every winter we change our program. I mean, every winter, whether it's because, you know, we determined early on that our kids need to be a little bit more physical. So we spent a lot of time on trying to figure out a training program that made sense and how to talk about that. Then, you know, several years ago, there was a big focus on velocity programs for all players, but in particular pitchers. And so, you know, we did our research on what was the best velocity program that actually had research behind it and was something that could be implemented, you know, within, you know, a reasonable cost and a reasonable time commitment. And so we added that to our program. And so we're constantly changing that. And honestly, in particular with technology changing, I mean, with everything from high-speed video to, you know, game scorekeeping apps like Game Changer, ways to communicate with parents, ways to they've got these sensors now, Zep sensors that give you bat speed and bat angle. It's incredibly it's a fast-moving environment right now.
So for all our listeners out there that have a youngster that they, you know, either they know is this guy has some talent, or maybe they just want to know, tell us what do they need to do, to what would be the process to get them to you guys, to walk them through the process real quick. Like, you know, you got website information, you want to give them some stuff so that they can, you know, reach you guys to get through that tryout process.
Yeah, our website is stlgamers.net, and you can go on there and read up on the directors of the program, a little bit about the program. There's also a place to sign up for tryouts. We host tryouts at the end of middle and end of July. If you can't make those, then we can piece you in, and then we'll meet with our coaches at the end of every season, get an evaluation, and kind of know going into those tryouts what we need roster-wise and positionally, so we fill in around the returning players. And that transitions into fall baseball, which typically for us starts around September, ends the end of October. And then we start our winter training program for the high school ages in December and the middle school and younger in January. And that goes through right up to the start of a high school tryout or the start of a spring season for the younger guys in April.
Now, if somebody tries out for you guys and unfortunately, I mean, it's not realistic for everybody to make it. I mean, do you guys go through the process of letting them know, hey, look, you know, this is what you need to work on, and please try it again? I mean, do you guys go through that with them?
Yeah, we have stations at our tryouts, and we do an evaluation where they get a phone call from somebody in the program with a yes or a no, and then they have the opportunity to request an evaluation on, you know, what their strengths were and weaknesses are. So we do provide that. It takes a lot of time to put all that together,
sure.
But, you know, we feel like we owe it to them for taking their time to come out and spend a day with us.
Yeah, because I think I really believe that, you know, with all the parents and some of the and people that we talk to, that whole tryout process is probably one of the most stressful things, you know, both for the kids and the parents. So it sounds like you guys have found a system and it works for you, obviously. And I think, you know, including the parents and letting the kids know, you know, where they're at, I think that's great. So for all the guys in your program then, they're all, I mean, and this is, and obviously honesty, I think, with your parents and all that, you know, and being transparent is a big thing. So it sounds to me like it's pretty clear that, you know, everybody coming in knows that, you know, the player has to also perform. I hate to use that word at such a young age, but they have to continue to get better and probably show the willingness to do the work and things like that. And that probably all goes into play on each year, because I'm assuming nothing's guaranteed, correct?
Right. It's the way we look at that kind of year-to-year evaluation process is really along two dimensions. One is kind of like, can he play or not?
Well,
at the level that we play.
Unfortunately, that's what it comes down to. Matt Lyle tweets out. You guys are probably familiar with Matt. He's got a lot of good tweets. And, you know, sometimes he says, you know, you don't get recruited or don't get playing time based on what your parents think of you. I mean, sooner or later you got to go out and perform.
And really at the high school level, that is, you know, that's a big deal because, I mean, ultimately that is the driver of the college process is can you play or not. At younger ages, though, I mean, you know, that's an important dimension, obviously, but for the developmental aspect of it, in particular elementary, middle school levels, we look at a dimension we call gamer qualities. And this is basically how hard a kid works. Is he coachable? Is he a good teammate? Does he play the game the right way? And we've kind of like detailed out what we mean by playing the game the right way. And we have 19 points of style of play that we measure kids on. And, you know, there's nothing better than we love than to take a kid that may not be that talented at a young age, 11 or 12, but he's a gamer. He has all those gamer qualities. And then as he grows and develops and goes into high school, you know, he physically catches up to where he is mentally and, you know, goes on to play college baseball. I mean, there's nothing more rewarding than that.
Do you guys ever have, like, another program? Like you say, you go down to Florida and you guys are continually, you know, educating yourselves and getting better. You've got some big programs that you guys compete against, and obviously you see them and you kind of know who they are if you're involved in this enough. Any programs out there that you kind of keep an eye on and say they're doing it the right way? And, you know, I have no idea. I mean, obviously I'm not familiar with them, but you see them like the Banditos or the Evo Shield, you know, Canes and things like that. I mean, obviously all these programs, some of them probably have some great qualities and some bad qualities. Is there anybody out there you guys are like, I think they're doing it right?
I think when you say program that there's a different, you know, our perspective may be different than somebody else's. For us, a program is where you actually do develop the kids and you're with them from a young age, hopefully throughout their high school careers, and you're able to spend time with them, and you know if they play basketball in the off season, and we collect their grades, and we know if they're a kid that's struggling academically and needs a little bit of a kick, or, you know, there's a lot of things that go into being a program. That there's, I guess, organizations like Evo Shield that, you know, they go out and recruit the best player, they put their name on their jersey, they fly them in and out of town for a tournament, and they might win the tournament, but I don't know that's necessarily a program.
Okay.
We do have to compete against them, and
sure.
You know, and from the development of our players, I think we've done a pretty good job of being able to compete more recently with those type of organizations. You know, there's places like the Memphis Tigers down south that we're partners with in a lot of things, and they do a good job. They practice a lot. They know their kids and families. There's the Dallas Tigers, Tommy Hernandez, a former teammate. They do a pretty good job, I think, with things like that. It just takes a lot of time and a lot of personal investment in the kids to call it a program as opposed to an organization.
You touched on something that I think is a key to it, and I want to talk about it. I think, you know, I admire you guys for this because, you know, it may be harder for a guy to do if he's just running one independent team, but I think, you know, you guys, and I know this because I'm friends with people that are in your program, you guys start with the grades. They have to give you guys their grades. So, do you start that at the young age just so that they learn, or how do you do that? I mean, because I got to be honest with you, I think my son's baseball coach getting on him about his grades might get more out of him than if I did. So I think that's great.
We collect 10-year-old grades
just because they. I mean, well, I think yeah. We're laughing about it, but I think the reality of it is it's like anything. If you start them at 10, they understand that it's part of the deal, right?
Yep, absolutely. They understand it's part of the deal. And it matters a whole lot. I mean, 10-year-olds, if they're not doing well in school, honestly, we can get through to them pretty quickly.
Yeah,
and they change real fast. It's probably faster than the high school age kids.
Go ahead. There's two 10-year-olds right now that they will, as soon as they get a report card, I don't have to ask for it. They bring it because it's gotten better, and they don't. You know, they're really proud about it, and they should be. They've worked hard to change it, but. Like Mark said, I think you can influence them a little easier and quicker than you can some guys that have some bad habits already ingrained.
Now, you know, can you think of? I mean, you don't have to. It doesn't have to be particular, but do you? You know, you've obviously had some kids that have been with you for a while. Do you find that by starting them younger with the grades being that important that it's easier? That like you don't, you know, we don't have any issues. This kid got it from the beginning, or are kids just kids and sometimes they just you know, hey, you know, it is what it is.
I think the fact that there's, they know it's hanging out there, and so yeah, they are, kids are just kids. So sometimes, in particular, you know, they'll go from middle school to high school and they struggle their freshman year.
Right.
That's a pretty common theme.
Yeah, it's common in my house.
And so the fact that they know their freshman year, you know, we're going to be looking at their grades pretty intently, because we make a big deal out of freshman year, getting off to a good start in high school, all that kind of stuff. You know, I think the fact that there's constant attention to it kind of helps kids get through that transition.
Yeah, that'd be the advice I'd give to anybody. I mean, I use my own son as an example, and he would tell you that he struggled mightily as a freshman, and you know, it wasn't like the end of the world, but I mean, it wasn't quality, you know, that he'd like it to be. And he's doing much better now, and I think he's frustrated that he's doing this much better and he's not seeing the GPA. and I told him, I said, well, that's why they, you know, that anybody worth their salt will tell you, that's why you want to start off well, because it's like hitting. If you start off the season 0 for 50, it's really hard to get that batting average up. I mean, you can go, you know, 10 for your next 10, and you're like, wait a minute, I'm hot here, and I'm still hitting Mendoza line here,
yep.
So,
Northwest Mutual partnered with us. They recognized what we did from an academic perspective and wanted to be a part of that. They sponsored all the NCAA Division I championships. And so they sponsored a wall at our facility, and any kid in our program that's maintained a 3.25 GPA gets their name on the wall. And so we can we talk about it all the time, but it's allowed us to recognize their accomplishments. And, you know, you see them walking by all the time, and parents are pointing to the names on the wall.
Wow.
And if little Johnny's name's not up there, I mean, you can see them kind of hang their head a little bit. So we've been fortunate for that. They've also sponsored two college scholarships for gamer players that,
oh, wow,
you know, we deem worthy, that have been gamers throughout and done things on the field and off the field that, you know, that we can recognize now. So I think that's something that's, you know, that's special about our program that a national organization like Northwest Mutual has recognized also.
Now, you know, speaking of that, so with scholarships and things, when the kids take that next step, now we're talking kids that have, you know, whether they've been with you a year or 5 years or whatever it is, 6, 7, 8 years, you know, they're looking at that next step. I mean, obviously we've touched on it, and I'm so grateful that, you know, all my guests on here will help reiterate it. You know, the grades will open up a lot of opportunities for you. And I say this a lot, and, you know, you can be a good baseball player, and if you have good grades, really, there's somewhere for you to play. But if their grades aren't there, man, you better be talking MLB draft, because it's really hard. The money's just not there in the college program. So, you know, I'm glad to hear you guys say that, and a lot of my guys have said that. But let's talk about that process, you know, quickly. Obviously, you guys have, you know, you've got kids that are 17, seniors in high school or juniors, and I think that sophomore junior year is really big for the kids. I mean, there's late kids too, but that process of you know, time to start thinking about what you're going to do after this. You know, tell us a little bit about that process as they prepare for that next level now.
Well, you know, Matt does a great job of managing that, you know, player by player, really from their sophomore year on. You know, it's amazing. It's our eighth year, and, you know, it's younger and younger and younger all the time. It's pretty interesting to watch. It's just in a matter of 8 years that it's gone from the focus on the junior year. Still a lot of focus on the junior year, but now there's a lot of competition or a lot of colleges looking at sophomores.
Yeah.
We could start kids thinking about it in right after their freshman year, and you know, it's a constant process that Matt has lined out. Matt, why don't you hit some highlights of what the process involves?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, you're touching on the academic side of it. Obviously, you have to be able to play the game a little bit, and your talent level is going to determine, for the most part, what division you end up. But the academic side of it does open up doors, like you mentioned, that some guys will never have the opportunity to get into. So what we do is we have a process where they'll, you know, first you create a profile where a college coach can see what you're about on the field and off the field. We have put together a wish list of colleges that are, you know, reach, attainable, and safe.
So I like that term, reachable.
Yeah. Well, a lot of them are out of reach. And,
sure.
And, you know, that's part of the individual conversations that we're able to have with them. When we look at the list, we can go, you know, this probably isn't realistic right now unless you gain 10 miles an hour, cut off, you know, 6 seconds on your 60 time.
Increase your grade point average by a full point.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's all
you're not going to you know, Notre Dame if you got a 2.0 and a 19 ACT. So
yeah. Even if you throw 90. I mean, you got to get in. You got to be able to get
admissions.
In.
Admissions is only going to give you so many guys that are below the, you know, below the line there. So we have a process with that part. We do a recruiting video. All this stuff is hosted on our website for the college coaches to be able to go to see. And then we have a systematic approach with some emails and a couple other things that we ask the players to do in timelines that kind of markets themselves and make them proactive. So at the end of the day, you know, the end of their year or career, when they look back, they can't say, well, I wish I had done X, Y, and Z, or I wish I had known how to get in touch with or get in front of college coaches. And, you know, part of it is the marketing yourself with things like that. Part of it is getting onto showcases that you get a lot of bang for your buck. And then part of it is getting onto those college campuses to their camps where they're going to want to see you, and the head coach is going to want to see what his assistant coach saw out on the recruiting trail. So there's a lot of different things that go into it, and we try to provide a blueprint for them to follow, and most of them do, and some of them have to be urged along. But you know, it's fun to be a part of, and it's really fun to watch them come up to you and go, "Coach, it worked. You know, I found my place." A great story, if I can take a second. A kid named Joshua Linick was a marginal, small D1 school left-handed pitcher, potentially, who had a 30 ACT. And an opportunity to go to Rhodes down in Memphis, a top three division academic school, pretty good baseball school now. Senior year this year, got almost a six-figure job leaving college, you know, because of where he went to play college baseball. The decision he made to go small D1, not academic school, or D3 school, less of an ego choice right. from a baseball side. And now he's stepping into the world with almost a six-figure salary, you know, in April or May of this year, where who knows where he would have been if he had made the other decision. So things like that, you know, they just kind of support what we talk about and what we preach all the time. And there's a lot of little stories like that that make it rewarding.
I think that's, you know, the sexy story, you know, D1, this and that. But, you know, junior college is, you know, oftentimes, you know, again, we talk about the percentages. Mm-hmm. Junior college, probably more times than not, is a great route for a lot of players. I mean, but to your point also, I think you're, you know, I love that you're touching on the academic part of it. I think it depends on the kid. I mean, if you've got the grades and you want to go, you know, a lot of it is too. And now we're getting into the real thing, you know, what is your, you know, and it's hard, you know, and I know they're 17, sometimes 16, and even at 18, they're still growing. What's their real baseball potential? I mean, maybe it's not been reached yet, but that's probably something hard you guys are taxed with too, is, you know, where is he projecting? I mean, now you're getting into probably some scouts helping you guys, saying, you know what, he's draftable. I mean, is that's probably that's the pinnacle, right?
Yeah, you know, I mean, if in this day and age with all the social media and technology, if you can play, they're going to find you. It doesn't matter if you're at Rhodes or if you're at SEMO or if you're at Mizzou or Clemson. I mean, if you can play and you're draftable, they'll find you. So if you have the ability to go and get a great education in case something happens where you don't get drafted, you should take it every time. And not to say that state schools don't provide good educations, but they're probably not in the same category as Wash U, Rhodes, Trinity, I mean, places like that.
Now, the whole drafting process, you guys probably, you know, you guys have good players, so you probably deal with, you know, scouting guys and things like that. I mean, how often do you, I mean, do you, this is an interesting question. How often do you guys kind of maybe get befuddled? Like, I just don't understand why he's not getting any looks, or, wow, they really, you know, I mean, that happens. I mean, because we see it. People get, man, they're really interested in him, and it's like, man, you know, I don't see it, but they see it or whatever. I mean, I'm sure you guys deal with, you know, is that probably the hardest part, is wanting for certain kids and not understanding others? I mean, that's got to be hard, because you probably love these kids like they're your own, you know?
Yeah, it's a it's challenging in two regards. One is, you know, professional sports is different, right? And so, I mean, their level of what they're looking at is so physical.
Sure.
That it's almost like this total showcase mentality, that whether the kid can actually play or not is secondary to what certain measurements say.
Sure.
And, you know, as a coach, that's frustrating.
Sure.
To see, you know.
It's probably as a player. It's probably very frustrating as a player.
Yeah, and as a player, if you scale that back from the professional level, even to the college level, you know, the same thing. It's like, you know, you it's almost like a money ball thing, honestly, because there are kids in that compete at the highest level of select baseball on the mound that get outs, that win games, but they don't meet certain criteria, and so they can't go play Division I baseball. But they can go down and beat the Evil Shield Canes.
Sure. Yeah. All that old saying, all he does is get people out, all he does is get hits. That's not good enough.
You see that on the mound. You see players that will sit there and take a 12, 15 pitch at bat and change a game against a clear Division I pitcher. But he's not good enough to play at
too
a small
level
because he's too small or a little bit too slow.
Too slow, yeah.
And so, there's a big opportunity for college coaches that are bright enough to see through the numbers.
Yeah, I think that's where you guys come in. Would I be wrong there? I mean, I think the reputation that you guys have earned over the years and many instructors, I think, and that's where you guys come in. Would you agree?
I think at this point in the game for us, as with the success we've had, and I think there's a trust factor is what you're getting at with college coaches of, all right, that's a pretty good program. They develop the kids. The kid is going to step onto my campus, and he's going to be a worker. He's not going to be overwhelmed by the conditioning or the weight program or the classroom. He's going to know how to play the game. I'm not going to teach him how to, cover first base on a ball to the right side, things like that. So I think what we can do is, the D1 guy, people can see that, right? I mean, we can all recognize that just if they're looking at a radar gun strictly, for example. But I think what we are able to do now is to, hey, coach, I got an outfielder that he's a two-hole hitter for us. He's played on a really good team. He competed against all these teams, had good at-bats. He's a plus outfielder, his average arm. You should probably give him a second look. He's a good academic kid. He probably got lost in the shadows a little bit from these other four or five guys that everybody, quote-unquote, came to see.
Right.
And getting them, that trust factor now I think is there to the point where we can pick up the phone, send them a message, and, hey, we got a couple guys that you ought to take a look at. I think that goes a long way now.
And I think the hard part, too, and we've talked about it on the show a couple times, I think the hard part for parents, and I think they all have to understand this, is that's why, and I think every parent expects you guys, I think they expect to give a glowing report about every player you've had. I just don't think you can do that. Because then you basically are losing credibility, and the players that you really need to help, you kind of lose that. Would that be an accurate statement?
You got to be honest. Because for two reasons. One is we're not going to be dishonest.
Right.
I mean, it's not why we're doing this. I mean, we're doing this because we want kids to end up in the right place, not in a place where they're in over their head.
Right.
So, Matt, we're going to be honest when we talk to college coaches. And secondly, just the reputation of the program is at stake. And so you've got to establish trust over a long period of time, you've got to give honest assessments.
Well, I tell you what, you guys, obviously you guys are doing it the right way. I mean, we're fortunate to have you guys in our backyard like some of the other places that we can call on and help us with the show. I mean, the show's success, I say all the time, is about the guests and what they can offer. And, having you guys, locally is a big plus for the show. And I wish you guys both continued success. I'm sure it will continue if you obviously with your effort to maintain what you started. So, special thanks to Mark Gallion and Matt Whiteside with the St. Louis Gamers. I can't thank you guys enough for being on the show.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
All right, glad to catch up with you guys soon again, maybe, huh?
Sounds great.
All right. Can't thank the St. Louis Gamers, Mark Gallion and Matt Whiteside, for joining us in the Upright Construction Studios this week. Just a quality organization. I think very fortunate in the St. Louis area to have some quality organizations. I tell everybody, whether it's, do your homework. Obviously, I'm good friends with Rick Strickland over at St. Louis Pirates, and I like their organization. I really like what the Gamers are doing. I think they do a wonderful job. Andy Bennis and his boy over at and his son, running the St. Louis Rawlings Prospects do a fine job. We've met some guys with the Rawlings Tigers. I think, in St. Louis right now, if you do your research, you ought to be able to find what you're looking for and go from there. But I just think it's great. Everybody does things a little bit differently, and find out what's right for you. So again, that's all we're trying to do is bring you some information. But our guests today were fantastic, and I appreciate both of them very much. Special thanks to Upright Construction, our good friend Matt Bowen, for sponsoring those guys today, coming on the show. If you want it done right, call Upright. That's 855-643-8877. Don't wait until it's too late. Call Upright today for all your home improvement needs. Our good friend Matt Bowen at 618-593-7844, or you can call Greg Manns at 314-374-1343. www.uprightconstruction.biz. Make sure you support these guys as they're helping us bring this show to you. But Upright is an accredited business by the Better Business Bureau, and they have an A-plus rating. So for all your home improvement needs, roofing, siding, soffit, decks, home remodels, kitchens, baths, anything, these are your guys. And like I said, they do a fantastic job, and their reputation second to none. But, you know, again, very special thanks to Matt Whiteside and Mark Gallion for coming into the Upright Construction Studios today. And that familiar music tells us it's time to go around the horn with our Youth Baseball Talk panel of experts. Welcoming to our Upright Construction Studio lines, let's kick it off this week with back-to-back trainings pitching instructor Tyler Mattmiller. Tyler, how we doing?
I'm doing great, Jim. Thanks.
Hey, I want to thank you for your tips. We're getting a lot of feedback from our listeners. This week, I've got a couple on the same topic, so I'm going to ask you this week. They're asking about proper ways to increase arm strength in kids. And, you know, I've always been a big believer in long toss is important. But there's proper ways to do it, just like anything else. Why don't you give us your thoughts on some good long toss programs for our youth?
We use long toss quite a bit. It's definitely the best way to strengthen a younger arm. You don't want to get too into weight training or anything like that with young athletes. So long toss is probably the best way to be able to build up that arm strength. You generally want to start out just with your regular catch routine and then continue to increase the distance as far back as you can get to where you're still throwing the ball on a line. So what I mean by that is, you know, you're not arcing the ball and the ball's not kind of floating through the air. You're still able to get your momentum behind it and really get good, strong throws on a line to your target. And that's really going to help build up that arm strength.
I see some kids doing it, and I think, and that's kind of what I was getting at. They almost get too far apart where they can't get it there, and they're kind of throwing it real high, and it's bouncing all over. So you're saying that we definitely want to keep that nice line drive, long throw going.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, keeping the ball on the line, you know, no higher than, you know, 10, 15 feet up in the air, and you're able to hit your partner in the chest every time, that's going to help really develop that shooting.
So for that age range from that, like, you know, 8, 9 years old up probably until, you know, 12, 13, 14, how many days a week would you recommend this?
I would say maybe every other day. So at practice, you know, you can play long toss every day just to stretch out and get loose. But as far as like a strengthening to where you're really playing a lot of long toss, I probably wouldn't do that on a back-to-back day. Maybe every other day, you know, 3 times a week, possibly 4, just depending on how the arm's feeling and how many games they have or if they've pitched or whatnot. But on a given week, if you're just practicing, I'd say every other day would be a good starting point.
That's awesome. How do our listeners get a hold of you, Tyler?
You can get a hold of me through our website. It's backtobacktraining.com, backtobacktraining.com.
All right, fantastic. Look forward to talking to you next week.
All right, thank you, sir.
Let's keep it with back-to-back and go to our catching instructor. Welcoming to the Upright Construction Studio lines is Jeremiah Konecstat with back-to-back training. How you doing, Jeremiah?
I'm good, Jim. How are you?
Good. Talking to some parents that listened to the show at some league games this week, and we were watching some of the catchers, and I think a big thing with the young guys is getting them to trust the proper throwing technique. I think sometimes they don't get the ball down the second and they start dropping the arm, throwing it like an outfielder, too many steps, things like that. You got a good drill that guys like myself or parents could use to get the kids that, you know, you see the good catchers, you know, it comes right out to the ear and they use their core a little more. You got something we can do for these guys?
I do. I have a few drills I do. And first off, what I try to encourage is, again, kind of going back a couple weeks, is make sure that the stance is correct. You know, and really quickly touch on that. Molina has been injured the past couple days. You know, that stance is really important. If he was in a good stance, that ball hits off of his shin guard, he's probably good to go. So getting a good stance, and with that, with the hand, if it's on the thigh, and it makes it really easy to get a good transition and an exchange. If you go back to the video we posted a couple weeks ago or a few sessions ago, that hand is going to be on the thigh, and they can take it straight up to their ear where they're going to make their exchange at. A drill that I've been doing lately is I'll have a kid start their gloves, basically almost like they're saying touchdown in football, and I'll toss the ball to their glove. They'll catch it, and they'll bring their hand straight to their ear, and I'm going to have them throw it straight to an L screen that's directly in front of them, but they're going to be facing away from the L screen. It kind of is odd whenever I'm explaining it. I'll have a video up. They'll make it, you know, very easy to watch and do and repeat. And then over time, we try to toss the ball a little faster, and then they're working on getting the ball out of the glove and just throwing it straight to second base and trusting their arm action. And then along with that, again, just having a proper form when they throw, talking kind of going the pitching route, the same form that a pitcher would use, except for the fact that a catcher's not going to take that ball down and around, but they're going to get that ball, you know, up, 90-degree, that kind of angle, and that way it can stay on top of the ball. At the younger age, I really try to stress, don't worry at all about how many kids you throw out. Just try to put a good throw on it, because your pitchers are not going to hold guys on as well as you'd like to.
Yeah, and then, you know, again, just part of the process. You know, let's not worry so much about immediate results and be part of the process. Why don't you tell our listeners how they can get a hold of you, Jeremiah?
They can check us out at backtobacktraining.com, which is back, number two, backtraining.com. They can send me an email at Jeremiah, Jeremiah, at backtobacktraining.com. And again, we'll have a YouTube video of this week's discussion. It'll make a lot more sense watching it on a video rather than trying to explain it over a conversation.
Well, that sounds great. I look forward to talking to you next week.
Sounds good. I appreciate it, Jim. Thank you.
And now let's welcome into our Upright Construction studio lines Rick Strickland from the St. Louis Pirates. Rick, how are you?
Doing good, Jim.
Hey, had some conversations with some people and some young guys, and you know, and I'm seeing it myself. You know, we're playing some awfully good teams out there. The hardest thing I think now that some of the kids are throwing a lot of change-ups, because you know, as the kids get better and they can all hit a fastball now as they get older. How do we get these kids to stay back? I'm struggling with it. I mean, even some of the kids that are hitting better, you know, and I think part of it is they're just timing up the fastball. You know, they may not even be doing it right, but at least they're feeling some instant success. But man, when they start throwing those changeups, they're so far out in front. How do we get them to stay back?
Well, a lot of it, Jim, it's a timing issue, not necessarily mechanical, but mechanics do go into it. The big issue we see is that kids really don't know when they should be starting their swing. Most young kids, by strength, are stronger in their shoulder areas. They swing the bat with their shoulders. Usually when a kid can change speed on a young hitter, you know, they're at the mercy of the pitcher at that point in time if he can throw one. So what we try to work with our young hitters on is the timing sequence, and then teaching them the ability to make adjustments on pitches as they see it go. I'll send you a clip, and you can share it with your folks. I took a video of a major league hitter on Tuesday this week on how late they actually start their swing, which gives them the greatest amount of flexibility into being able to adjust the swing according to pitch and movement on the pitches. And that's where it is. You can't teach a kid to stay back, or you shouldn't teach a kid to stay back. You may rephrase that by teaching a kid to start a swing later.
Yeah, it was amazing. I actually remember when I had first met you a few years ago, you showed me a video of actually when you think, because the pros are throwing so hard, that these guys are starting so soon. A lot of them actually are not, which I was really surprised by.
No, and if you videotape your kid, you'll find out that those kids start this swing way early. And it's really not necessary. Those guys can start their swing later on a 95-mile-an-hour fastball. Certainly younger kids can start their swing later on a 70-mile-an-hour fastball. So I think the process of teaching a kid how to be able to adjust the change-ups is to teach them the whole timing sequence in the correct fashion. Now, I also say this, guys who are really good change-up hitters are probably not good fastball hitters.
Yeah, it's hard to be good at it all, right? But that's why some of the best are the best. So, no, that's good stuff. We look forward to seeing the video. How does everybody find you, Rick?
EliteBaseballTrainingSTL.com, or give us a call here at 314-219-4103.
On a personal note, I got to ask you. I know, and I had sent some stuff out. You had your old pupil, Cody Ashy, in town. I know you got to spend some time with him. How's that going?
It's always nice. You know, very proud, almost like a proud papa here. You've known this kid since he was 15 years old. You see him doing well at the major league level.
It's always a pleasure to get together with him and talk hitting.
Yeah, it seems like a real appreciative kid too. I know he threw some. I know he threw some props out to you and some of the work. I'd heard him mention you in particular and the Pirates and the work he got there as far as getting him prepared for the next level.
That's awesome. I love to hear guys. We do this for that reason, not for any of the other stuff that we do. It's just because we love the appreciation the kids get back.
Well, like I said, I'm happy for you, and I know you're proud of him. So that's good stuff. Look forward to seeing you next week, Rick.
I'll talk to you next weekend.
How about that?
Great show today. Very happy to bring it to you. Make sure to check out all of our other podcasts on the Ignotainment Network, especially my good friend the Ocho Man over at Behind the Eight Ball. Really good stuff. If you go to the Ignotainment Network, you'll see the variety of shows that we have, from the Whiskey Philosopher to our MMA show. You know, just really good stuff to you know, for your listening pleasure, depending on your mood or your interest. So from all of us here at Youth Baseball Talk, we will see you next week.
Youth Baseball Talk with your host, Jim Cromer, only on the Ignotainment Media Network. Remember to leave us your questions and comments below this podcast in the comments section of the iTunes podcast store. You can also visit our website at www.ignotainment.com.